Okay, so you're probably thinking, great, another corporate law case. Just what I need is a law student. But hear me out on this one. We're talking about Portnoy v. Cryocell, a Delaware case that's practically ripped from the headlines. Seriously, this one has it all: boardroom drama, high-stakes elections, and some seriously questionable tactics.
It's like a real-life legal thriller. And it's a case that's still super relevant today.
Exactly. It's not just some abstract concept. We're talking about the nuts and bolts of how proxy contests work the battles for control that can make or break a company.
And what's really fascinating about Portnoy is that it sets the boundaries for how far management can go when they're fighting to hold on to power. Like, where's the line between playing hardball and actually breaking the rules?
Right, because let's be honest, things can get pretty heated in these situations.
Absolutely. Shareholders are demanding change, management is trying to protect their positions, and sometimes those interests clash.
And that's exactly where Portnoy v. Cryocell comes in. This case really digs into those gray areas and gives us, as future lawyers, the tools to understand what's acceptable and what crosses the line.
It's a roadmap for navigating the minefield of corporate elections.
So let's break this down for everyone listening. Can you give us the background on Cryocell? What kind of company are we talking about, and why were they facing this proxy fight in the first place?
Sure. Cryocell was in the business of cord blood banking, basically, preserving stem cells from umbilical cord blood for potential medical use later on. It was a hot industry at the time, but Cryocell was hitting some serious financial headwinds. Like, the stock price was struggling, and some shareholders were starting to get really vocal about the company's direction.
Ah, so the classic recipe for shareholder discontent.
You got it. When a company isn't performing well, you can bet that shareholders will start making noise, especially those who hold a significant chunk of the company's stock.
And that's where our main players come into the picture, right? We've got Mercedes Walton, the CEO, trying to steer the ship, and then two major shareholders, Andrew Filipowski and David Portnoy.
Yeah, and both Filipowski and Portnoy weren't exactly thrilled with the way things were going, but they had different ideas about how to fix it. Filipowski seemed open to working with Walton, at least to some extent, while Portnoy was much more, let's say, proactive.
Proactive meaning he wanted to shake things up.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Portnoy decided to launch a full-on proxy fight, meaning he nominated his own slate of directors to replace the existing board, including Walton. Basically, he wanted to take control of the company and change its course.
Okay, so it was a real showdown for control of the company. No wonder things got a little messy.
Understatement of the year. The court ultimately found that Walton and her team took some pretty drastic steps to try and win this election, and that's where the legal issues come in.
So let's get into the specifics of what the court actually found problematic. You mentioned earlier that there were three main areas of misconduct. What was the first one?
The first one's a doozy. It involves that side deal between Walton and Filipowski that we talked about earlier. Remember how Filipowski was a major shareholder who wasn't super happy with the company's performance but seemed willing to work with Walton?
Yeah, I remember. What about him?
Well, it turns out Walton made him a little promise, a promise that wasn't exactly shared with the rest of the shareholders. She basically told him that if her management slate won the election, they'd expand the board of directors and give Filipowski a seat for one of his own nominees.
So it was like a quid pro quo. You support me, and I'll give you a seat at the table.
Precisely. And this is where things get legally dicey.
Mm-hmm.
Under Delaware law, when you're asking shareholders to take action, like voting in a director election, you have a fiduciary duty to disclose all material information to them. And this little side agreement, definitely material.
Hold on, back up for a sec. What exactly do we mean by material in this context?
It means information that a reasonable shareholder would consider important when deciding how to vote. It's not just any random tidbit.
So, in simpler terms, would knowing about this secret deal have potentially changed how other shareholders voted?
Exactly. And the court in Portnoy said, heck yeah, it would have mattered. They concluded that this promise of a board seat was something shareholders had a right to know about before casting their votes.
Okay, that makes sense. So basically, by keeping this agreement under wraps, Walton deprived the other shareholders of information that could have influenced their decisions.
Right. It's all about transparency and making sure everyone has a fair shot at making an informed choice.
So, score one for Portnoy. What was the second issue that the court took issue with?
This one involves another company called Saneron. Cryocell owned a big chunk of Saneron, like 38% of their stock. And Walton, being the savvy CEO she was, saw this as leverage.
Leverage how? What does she do?
She used Cryocell's ownership stake in Saneron to pressure them into voting for her slate of directors. It's like, hey, Santaron, you better vote the way we want or else CryoCell might not be so cooperative on those joint projects they were working on together. You know, things that could really hurt Santaron's business.
So it was a bit of a strong-arm tactic.
You could say that. But Walton didn't just use threats. She also dangled some carrots. She offered to remove a restrictive legend on Santaron's shares, which would make them easier to sell and potentially more valuable.
Clever. But is that even legal? I mean, aren't shareholders allowed to vote their shares however they want?
That's a great question, and it gets to the heart of this issue. Yes, shareholders generally have the right to vote their shares however they choose, and they can even sell their votes if they want. But there are limits, especially when it comes to using corporate power to influence those votes.
So how is this different? What made Walton's actions cross the line?
The key distinction is that she wasn't just trying to persuade Santaron as an independent shareholder. She was using CryoCell's corporate power, its assets and influence, to coerce them into voting a certain way.
So it wasn't about what was in the best interests of Santaron. It was about what was in the best interests of Walton and her team staying in control.
Exactly. And the court found that this kind of behavior violated her fiduciary duty to act in the best interests of all shareholders, not just herself. It's a classic example of what's called entrenchment, using your power to protect your own position, even if it's not the best thing for the company or its shareholders.
Makes sense. Now, what about that third area of misconduct? The one that sounds like something out of a movie.
Oh, you mean the leper incident?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty wild.
Yeah.
It all went down at the 2007 annual meeting where the vote was actually taking place.
What happened?
Well, as the voting was underway, Walton decided to stall. Like,
yeah.
Really stall. She added all these unscheduled presentations in the meeting. And then, get this, she called for a 3-hour leper break.
A leper? What even is that?
It's like a late lunch, I guess. But 3 hours? Come on.
Sounds more like a strategic delay tactic.
The court thought so, too. They concluded that Walton intentionally dragged out the meeting to give her more time to twist arms and secure the votes she needed.
So she was basically manipulating the process to ensure a victory for her side.
You got it. And this kind of procedural maneuvering is a big no-no in corporate law. It violates the principle of fair and transparent elections. Shareholders have the right to vote in a timely and orderly manner without being subjected to these kinds of shenanigans.
Okay, so we've got these three major areas where the court found Walton acted improperly. But how did they ultimately decide the case? What was the legal standard they used to evaluate these actions?
The central question was whether Walton's actions crossed the line from aggressive campaigning to illegal or inequitable conduct. And in Delaware, the courts take fiduciary duty very seriously.
So they weren't just looking at whether she technically broke a rule. They were looking at whether she violated her fundamental obligations to the shareholders.
Exactly. And when there's evidence of questionable conduct, the burden of proof shifts to the management team. They have to prove to the court that their actions were entirely fair and in the best interests of the shareholders.
So it's not enough for them to say, hey, we were just playing hardball. They have to show that they were acting with the utmost good faith and fairness.
Right. And the court in Portnoy looked at each of those three areas, the Filipowski deal, the Santaron pressure, and the meeting manipulation, and found that Walton and her team simply couldn't meet that burden of proof.
Let's unpack that a bit. How did they apply this entire fairness standard to each of those specific instances?
Starting with the Filipowski deal, they said that the secret promise of a board seat was clearly material information that shareholders had a right to know about. It directly affected the balance of power on the board, and withholding that information put other shareholders at a disadvantage.
Okay, so they really hammered home that point about transparency. What about the Santaron situation?
There, the court focused on the fact that Walton used CryoCell's corporate power to pressure Santaron. It wasn't just about persuading an independent shareholder. It was about leveraging their ownership stake to coerce a certain outcome.
And that's where the whole issue of entrenchment comes in, right? It wasn't about what was best for Santaron or even CryoCell as a whole. It was about Walton protecting her own position.
Exactly. And when it came to the meeting manipulation, the court was pretty clear that those delays were intentionally designed to influence the outcome of the vote. It was about buying time and twisting arms, not about conducting a fair and transparent election.
So, all in all, a pretty damning assessment of Walton's actions.
Absolutely. The court found that she crossed the line in multiple ways and violated her fiduciary duty to the shareholders.
So what happened next? What was the remedy? Did Portnoy and his slate just take over the company?
Not quite. While the court found significant misconduct, they didn't want to completely override the will of the shareholders. Remember, Delaware courts are generally reluctant to interfere in corporate elections unless it's absolutely necessary.
So they tried to find a solution that was fair and balanced.
Exactly. They decided to order a new election, a do-over, essentially. But to make things right, they required Walton and her team to foot the bill for this new election.
Interesting. So they had to pay for their own mistakes.
Precisely. And to ensure that the new election was conducted properly, the court appointed a special master to oversee the process. It was all about restoring fairness and giving the shareholders a clean slate.
That makes sense. Now, stepping back from the specifics of this case, what are the broader lessons that we as future lawyers can learn from Portnoy?
This case is a goldmine of valuable insights into corporate law and governance. First and foremost, it highlights the importance of transparency and full disclosure in proxy contests. Shareholders have a right to know all the relevant information before casting their votes.
So no more secret deals or backroom maneuvering.
Right. And second, Portnoy sends a clear message that using corporate resources for personal gain or entrenchment is a big no-no.
It's all about putting the interests of the company and its shareholders first.
Exactly. And finally, this case shows us that the courts play a vital role in safeguarding the integrity of corporate elections. They're there to ensure that the process is fair and that everyone plays by the rules.
And they're not afraid to step in when those rules are broken.
Not at all.
This has been a really fascinating deep dive into a case that's both dramatic and legally significant. I think it really underscores the importance of understanding these principles of corporate governance, not just for law students, but for anyone involved in the business world. So as we wrap up, I'd like to leave our listeners with a question to ponder. Given what we've learned from Portnoy, what steps can companies take to avoid these kinds of issues in the first place? What safeguards can they put in place to ensure that their elections are truly fair and transparent?
That's a great question, and it's something for all of us to think about. Because at the end of the day, the goal is to have a system that works for everyone, shareholders, management, and the company itself.
Absolutely. And understanding cases like Portnoy is a crucial step in that direction.